Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is value for money. And the numbers to call to get coaching on having what you want and thriving in every area of your life are 866-254-1579. Toll free in the United States and Canada on 866-254-1579. Or from outside the U.S., you can reach the show by dialing your country code, followed by 760-918-4300. And we're going to do a little special giveaway today. So anyone who gets on air with me today will get sent out a copy of a interview that I did with my friend Steve Chandler, who's the author of Wealth Warrior. And we'll send out a copy of an interview that he did with me, sort of a teleseminar. We'll send CDs out to you. So just if you get on, stay on the line after the call, and Joe will get your details, and we'll get you out a CD in the next week or so. I want to set the table, as I always do. And today I'm going to talk about value for money in two ways. So in the first part of the show, I'm going to talk about how we exchange value for money. And in the second part of the show, I'm going to talk a little bit about how we exchange money for value. So I wrote in Supercoach a few years back about the distinction between thinking like an employee or thinking like a creator. And the example that I used, I told the story of an actress that I had worked with, and I called her Charlie in the book. That wasn't her real name, but she was a really beautiful, very talented, and moderately successful actress. But she'd not made the big breakthrough. And when I asked her, you know, what she thought was stopping her, she told me about, you know, the problem she'd had with her agent and her manager and directors and producers, and I listened for a while, but at some point I'd had enough. And I just asked her, I said, where do you think your next job is going to come from? And she talked about all the, yeah, good point. I mean, it's so difficult to get a job as an actress, and I'm getting older. I mean, I'm over 25, which, you know, apparently is old here. And so I tried a different question. I asked her, where do you think your next great performance is going to come from? And she said, well, and she had to stop to think about it. And she got a little bit reflective, and she said, well, it's going to come from inside me. And I said to her, well, that's right. You know, and when you spend all your time and energy and focus trying to get someone to give you a job or trying to get somebody to give you a chance, you're thinking like an employee. And when you shift your focus to what you can create, and what differences you can make in people's lives. In other words, what value you can exchange for money. Now you're thinking like a creator. And the interesting thing is the more time you spend thinking like a creator, the more opportunities you spot. And it can seem like they're knocking at your door, even though really you're spotting them, you're finding them, because you're actually taking on the role of giver as opposed to the role of taker. And I use the analogy in the book of imagine two handymen, and they both they come to do some work on your home. And the first one does a great job, shows up on time, charges what he said he would, but he thinks like an employee. So when the job's done, he lets you know, hey, I'm available for any future work. I really appreciate your business. And he goes home and he waits for the phone to ring. And he kind of just hopes, well, you know, I did a really good job. Hopefully they'll call me back. And oh, you know what, maybe I'll give him a 10% discount on the next job. Maybe that'll help get him to call me back, give me another chance. Well, the second handyman does something different. So he does the same thing. He does a great job, shows up on time, charges what he said he would, but he thinks like a creator. And as he was working in your home, he was learning about you, and he noticed, you know, that you seem to really love your kids, but there's no space in the house for you because it's been taken over by the kids. And so there's no room for you to relax or unwind in. And so he finishes the job and he's thinking about you, and he's thinking about what would really make a difference for this person. And he comes up with an idea and he calls you and he says, look, I hope you don't mind my calling, but I've seen when I was at your house, I just thought we could do your yard and I could create this Zen garden topiary with animal shrubbery for your kids. But I could also create some sort of private contemplative space for you. And it, you know, it's obviously it's going to cost some money, but if it's something you'd like to do, I'd love to create that for you. And when he goes home after a job, he's not waiting for somebody else to phone him back. He's dreaming up other ways that he can create value for money, other ways that he can serve with the skills that he's got, and just create more wonderful things and more ease in people's lives. And he's not really hungry for work because he's filled up with his creativity. But if he does want to make some extra money, well, he creates some targeted proposals where he can exchange value for money and sends them out into the world like invitations. And not everyone's going to come to the party, but when people do, they're delighted by his creation. So I'm going to go to the phones in just a minute. Numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. And from outside the U.S., 001-760-918-4300. And remember, everyone who gets on air today will get a free copy of a special CD from the Wealth Warrior, Steve Chandler, interviewing me about getting out of your own way around money. But here's a question I just want you to mull over as you listen. And I've talked about it before on this show, and it's a question I first shared with my friend Paul McKenna, and he put it in his book, I Can Make You Rich. And the question is this: if you woke up one morning in a place where you knew no one, with $100 in your pocket, how long would it take you to double your money, and how would you do it? And for some people, that's a really difficult question. But if you find that a really easy question, well, how long would it take you to double it again, and how would you do it? And again, and again, and just play with that, because the more answers you can come up with, the more your financial future is secure. Think of it this way. Would you rather have a pocket full of cash or an ATM card with access to an account with a potentially unlimited balance? That's the difference between focusing on savings, and I'm not against savings, obviously, it's a very sound thing to do, but between focusing on savings and focusing on creating. Because if you put all your energy into saving, you'll build up a bank balance, which will be great, but it can get wiped out. That's what happened to a lot of people in this economy. If you put that same amount of energy into creating value and exchanging it for money, then wherever you go, wherever you are, you're going to find ways of doing that too. Let's get to the phones, and let's begin with a regular caller, Dan in Philadelphia. Dan, nice to hear from you. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Michael. First off, I would like to answer your question about what I would do with $100.
Okay, great.
Basically, I would get some paper and a ballpoint pen and some paints and a paintbrush, because that's what I do, and that's kind of what my question's about. And I would just create artwork and write some poetry and, just express my creativity in a way that hopefully would double it. Now, the question about it is that my question for you is there's an art street fair that I'm participating in for the first time this Sunday. And I've never really had to price my work. I'm going to have a few of my self-published books of poems and a lot of artwork framed. But I don't have the first clue about how to price it, because I don't want to say that my work is invaluable, because it comes from my heart and my mind and my soul. So I don't know. That's kind of the dilemma I'm in, and I was just wondering if we could discuss that.
Sure. And it's a really common dilemma because one of the things that I think it's useful to know is the reason that things have prices, have fixed prices is largely, and this is what I've been, what I've learned, that is because of the Quakers. Because up until, a few hundred, I guess now probably four or 500 years ago, but up until the Quakers, people made up prices and bargained. And that was just how pricing worked. And everyone knew it was made up, and everyone knew you could bargain, and that was the game. And the Quakers have an admonition about lying. So to a Quaker, and often Quakers became merchants because that was one of the few completely nonviolent things that they could take on in any culture.
Yeah.
They felt like making up a price was lying. So they decided that they would start selling goods for fixed prices, and they would write the price down ahead of time, so that nobody could accuse them of making up a higher price if you came in with a fancy pocket watch and well-dressed than if you came in sort of, torn calico.
Okay.
And so the idea that something has a real price is actually just a myth that's developed out of that, really creative Quaker way of not having to make something up.
Okay.
But if you go back to the truth of it, which is that even the number that the Quakers made up was made up, whatever right. the basis for it, then, and you recognize, well, I'm going to make up a price. There isn't a real price for this. So what's the basis I want to make for it? And there's many different ways to play the game, but the one I always like as a starting point is to just check, because almost everyone I've ever spoken with has an internal price point. So let me ask, think of one of your paintings that you're going to be putting on display. You got one in mind?
Let me look at my wall, because I have them on. Yeah, there's one I'm looking at right now. Yeah.
Okay, great. Is the price more or less than a dollar?
It would be more than that. And okay. I only say that because the frame cost me $10 and the supplies cost me a few dollars. So.
Okay, well, you're being logical and that's cool, but let's just stick with my game here. Is it more okay. or less than $1,000?
You know, just from my value of thinking of who I am and what I put into my artwork and my... And
okay, you're thinking way too much here, Dan. I'm looking for a gut response. We're just playing a game of high-low. Is it more or less than 1,000?
Less than.
More or less. No. You're thinking again. If you say anything other than more or less, you're thinking. Okay. Is it more or less than $10?
More.
More or less than $500?
Less.
More or less than $50?
I think that's the price point. Yeah.
Fantastic. So here's my suggestion. It's my invitation. Okay. Do that with each thing that you're going to put out. Play that game with yourself. If you hear yourself starting to justify it up or down, ignore that and just go back to the gut. And then let the market tell you if they agree with you.
Okay.
And you'll know that they agree with you because they'll give it to you or they won't.
Yeah. That's the thing. I guess I was once looking for the concept of prices, but I just want to be in the moment and just enjoy myself and be in the experience. And like you're saying, it's going to be a learning experience for me, which is good. So
yeah. And in the second half of the show, keep listening, because in the second half of the show, I'm going to talk about what makes something valuable for the consumer, which isn't necessarily what we think makes it valuable from our place as the creator or the seller.
Okay.
All right, Dan, stay on the line and Joel, get your address and we'll get a CD of Steve Chandler and I talking about wealth and getting out of your own way.
Okay, as always, thank you, Michael.
All right, Dan. Let's go to Boston and let's speak with Diane. Diane, welcome to the show. What are we going to speak about today?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you.
I am at a place where I feel really stuck. I have a self-employment direct sale business, and I've been doing it for a while, but I went through a transition of divorce and all that goes with that. And I'm having a hard time getting out of my own way to resurrect it. And I just feel like I sabotage myself with not being organized or just don't have the action steps. You know, so when I do have time, I can't find my leads or I don't know. I just wanted to get some feedback so I can shift my thinking about it because I am successful at it in the past. And
yeah.
I don't know, you know, what's happening with that. So, and I'm at a place where I can move and I need to get the income going and maybe get 20 appointments in October, to fund the move and just be self-sufficient and back on track with my wealth.
Okay. So let me do the reality check question first. Are you telling yourself the truth when you say you need to get 20 appointments in October?
If I break down the commission to get into this new house, I would need that to fund my move.
Okay, great. So the game that you're playing is get into the new house, is fund the new house.
Right.
And to win that game, you've worked out that the only way to win that game, or the most obvious way to win that game, let's say it that way, would be to get 20 appointments.
Yes.
Okay, great. So the question then becomes, what is it in your mind that's stopping you from doing what you've done in the past to get 20 appointments? Like, I know that's a really commonsensical question, but let's start there.
I'm not even sure. I just feel this huge block, where when I do have the time, I don't make the calls or I find something else to do. It's not like the most fun thing getting on the phone. But when I do get on the phone, I am successful. So,
right.
So say the question again.
Well, here's a new version of the question.
Okay.
Do you want to make 20 appointments in the next week?
Yes.
Okay. So if you want to make 20 appointments in the next week, and I'm going to take you at your word for now.
Okay.
Okay. By the way, I think everybody lies to me, so it's not personal. But if you want to do that, why would you take a feeling of, oh, I'm not in the mood, I don't want to do something
right.
else?
Right.
Why would that have any import to you? It's like, if I'm hungry and I want to eat,
right.
and I have a thought, gee, yeah, but there's starving people in places in the world, and maybe, you know, I noticed the thought, but it doesn't
right.
stop me from eating.
Right. Right.
So for some reason, you're taking whatever thoughts are popping into your head when it's time to make an appointment.
Right.
Seriously.
Yeah.
So what's that about?
I'm not sure if I have a fear of being successful at it, or if it's the right, it's definitely an income that I can count on, but, I'm not sure if I should be starting my own business as opposed to selling someone else's
okay,
product.
Okay, but stay with
another.
Me because that you so here's what I just heard listening through the ears of somebody who wants to make 20 appointments in the next week. Okay, I just mm-hmm. heard the thoughts coming through, blah 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 blah
right.
blah blah blah, nothing to do with what I want, blah blah blah.
Right.
I'm not saying
right.
that those questions might not be great questions for you to explore at another time.
Mm, right.
But it strikes me that they have no relevance to what you're saying, what you're telling me you want.
Right. Right.
Now, if what you were telling me you wanted was like a 7-year project, then I might suggest that you might want to entertain those projects before jumping in, those kind of questions. But given that you're talking essentially about a one to four week project.
Right.
It just
right.
seems really odd that you would prioritize those questions over how do I get my next appointment?
Right. That's a good point. Good point.
So here's the coachy question.
Mm-hmm.
You knew the risks. You called a coaching show.
Yeah.
Are you going to do what you know to do to make those appointments in the next week?
Yes.
Cool.
Yes.
Our work here is done.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Stay on the line and we will get a CD out to you as well.
Thank you. I love your show.
Thanks, Diane. Do you know, I mean, it's understand if you're listening and you're going, well, those are important questions. Sure they are. At another time, right? If you notice yourself, if an Olympic athlete, let's do it that way. It might be easier to see in that context. If an Olympic athlete is stepping up for their final dive, going for the gold medal, and they have the thought, is this what I really want to be doing with my life? That's not the time to answer that question. Important though that question may be, the question will wait. The dive won't for now. All right, let's go back to the phones. Let's go out to San Francisco, California, and let's speak to Monica. Monica, welcome to the show. What are we going to speak about today?
Hi. I would like to talk. Well, first of all, I really, really like your show and the topic today. And I like your first listener, what he said about the $100. So I'm going to follow up with that. And I think that what I would do is that I would create bumper stickers that would say, I'm the proud parent of a child with special needs.
Oh, nice.
And so I'm choosing to switch professions from being an architect to being a stay-at-home mom. I have two children with special needs, and I've been really successful on getting everything that they need. And this has been because I've just been focusing on elevating every person that we and my children have contact with. So I've been getting the impossible for them, which is treatments and therapies and services. And I would really like to help other parents to embrace what they have and to help them through the process and, you know, even going through sometimes medical appointments, which can be really, really frightening when you don't know what they're telling you or when they give you a diagnosis that at the time feels a little bit challenging. So I just... You know, that's how I don't know how to focus on creating value out of doing that type of service.
So I'm a little confused by the question because it sounds like the value is so obvious to me. So tell me.
Or I guess it's like, how do I get it out to the universe so that people would you know, how do I start to get people to ask for my services?
Well, okay, so that's an interesting.
Because I have the fear.
I don't know if you heard the way you asked the question. How do I get people to ask for my services? In other words, how do I, the humble employee and servant, get people to ask me to work for them?
Right.
How do I take money from people? Now, I know you don't mean it in a bad way.
No, that's why I'm calling. I know what I really want to do.
Sure. I understand. But I want to highlight that because it also points us to where your solution's going to be. Which is finding somebody, finding one person who could really benefit from it and offering it to them. Do you see how that's a completely different activity? And that's an activity that's 100% with you. You know, their only role is whether they accept or decline or negotiate.
Okay.
And it's something you can do anytime, anywhere. And it's something where the more you put your attention on, not only will you have more creative thought about it, because just that's just the way the mind works, is what we pay attention to, we get more creative thought about, for better or for worse. But also, I can tell you from not just my experience, but most people's experience, when you start looking at who can I serve, it's really easy to get going. There's really nothing that ever stands in the way of that question. When you start looking for who can I get to give to me, who can I take from, a lot of people get really stuck on that one. So can you think of, even off the top of your head, somebody who would really benefit from what you're offering?
Oh, yes. I already know a lot of people that can benefit. And I guess it's just the fear.
Sure, but here's what will help you with that. You don't have to ask a lot of people. You don't have to talk to a lot of people. You need to talk to one person.
Okay.
And when you've talked to them, you get to talk to another if you want to.
Okay.
Okay, so who's going to be, you don't have to tell me their name, can you pick out already who the first person's going to be?
Yes.
Great. And when are you going to have that conversation?
Tomorrow.
All right. And I would love it if you would just take a minute to post to Facebook.
Okay.
You can find... facebook.com/mneil and just share how it goes.
I will.
Okay. And stay on the line. We're going to get your address. We're going to send you out a CD as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Monica. It is just so natural to think like an employee. We're conditioned to think like employees, to think like, you know, ooh, you mighty people who have money that we don't. You know, how can we get you to give us some of it? Well, that's just such a disempowered, no fun, icky way to approach life and money. And that little shift from taker to giver, that little shift from worrier to warrior, that little shift from what can I get to what can I give, not only feels good for most people because the way we think about it, but it works. It just plain works out in the world. And I can't recommend it highly enough. We will take more of your calls in the second half. Stacy, you are next in the queue, so hang on over the break if you can. If you want to get in the second half, numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll-free in the United States and Canada, 866-254-1579, or from outside the U.S., you can reach the show by dialing your country code, usually 001, followed by 760 918-4300. And I remember every caller who gets on the air today will get a copy of a free CD with the wealth warrior himself, Mr. Steve Chandler, and me. And if you like the kind of ideas we talk about on the show, please, please, please check out more at supercoach.com. And if you're a coach and interested in learning more, you can check out our new masterclass series beginning in LA in October, supercoach.com/masterclass. We will be right back after this short break.
Supercoach!
Transform your life today. Welcome to Supercoach with Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking about value for money, and we'll be taking more of your calls in just a few moments. I want to share the other part of value for money. We talked about, well, how do I create value and exchange that for money? And I want to also just bring up the other half of that equation, which is how do I get more value for my money? And that's not about negotiating or anything like that. It's about recognizing that the value that we receive, and this is always true of our customers and clients as well, is completely subjective. That is, the value that we receive from a service or a good is not just its practical value. It's its experiential value. In other words, it's how we think about it. And it's why a question that I learned to ask years ago has served me so well over the years, which is when I'm about to make any kind of purchase of any size, either just before or sometimes after I've made the purchase, I go, well, given that I've made it okay to spend this much money, is there anything I'd rather spend the money on? And I had a chance to kind of put this into practice just in the past couple of days. I was up in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, and at the Mall of America. And I was in town. I was doing a few seminars, corporate things. And I'd forgotten my razor. And I stopped into this lovely looking shop. And they sold these beautiful handles, razor handles, you know, that worked with disposable blades. And I thought, well, that's really nice. And there's a nice wood carved one. And I went to buy it, and I was sort of caught off guard because it was $200, and I was expecting it to be less than that. But it was really nice, and I did need a razor, and I went to buy it, and I thought to myself, well, given that I've decided that it's okay for me to spend $200 on something, is there anything I would rather spend my $200 on? Is there anywhere I would get more value for money? Not necessarily in a practical sense, because I just needed a razor handle and I knew I could pick that up for probably $5, $10, but experientially. And I realized that I would have so much more fun getting a cheap razor handle and buying gifts for the kids. So I did. I went out and I kind of went, well, I've just given myself $200 to spend. And I bought a bunch of presents for the kids and some presents for Nina. And I actually found another really nice razor handle made out of tiger's eye, and bought that for $30 and wound up with a bunch of cool stuff, some nice gifts, and a great razor handle and $100 in my pocket. Now, that's what I'm talking about when I talk about value for money. If you recognize that the value of your purchase isn't just in its practical element, and you kind of know that already, it's experiential, then you can take the time to create the experience for yourself that you want. And in creating a richer experience, you'll create more value for money on that end of the equation as well. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go, it sounds funny to say, let's go to LA, because I'm in LA, but let's go to a different part of LA and let's talk to Stacy. Stacy, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Thank you, Michael. How are you today?
I'm well. Could you speak up? We've got you very far away.
Okay, can you hear me better now?
Yes, I can.
Great, great. So I was calling because I recently have gotten more into meditation and positive affirmations and visualization, and it's really helped me with growing closer to source and de-stressing and getting in touch with my true gifts and things like that. And so I've begun to think about, you know, what gifts do I have that I haven't expressed, and how can I serve as well? And I kind of birthed this dream or goal, I guess I would say at this point, to create a series of meditation CDs. And what I'd like to do is, you know, use a lot of these positive affirmations that have helped me in these CDs and market and sell them to other people. But since this is very new to me, it's completely different from the industry that I've been working in, I'm not exactly sure where to start.
Well, I mean, I'm going to just go with a really practical answer, but you live in LA.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many, I wouldn't say on every street corner,
yeah,
but on most street corners, you can find a place where you can go in, and I would guess for less than $50, you can get an hour of recording time.
Mm-hmm.
and just go in, and they'll even, you know, produce a master for you. And then there's dozens of replication places that'll do it for, you know, for pennies a CD.
Right.
So the practicals really, you know, especially if you're living in LA, really simple, let alone you can always, you know, it's so most computers have home recording equipment now too.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to assume that that bit isn't an issue.
Well, yeah, and that I've thought about. I think in terms of just producing the whole project, because I'm thinking about pulling in musicians and, you know, obviously, you know, getting the studio is not an issue. Like you said, there's one in every corner. But in terms of just pulling the whole project together and how it would be done, I'm not
so,
sure.
So, yeah, no. So, and there's something I can hear in your voice. There's something in the way that you're thinking about it that makes it seem like a big deal instead of a bunch of simple steps. Because, like, when I hear it, I go, okay, so I need a musician, I need a studio, I need a script, and I need an hour.
Okay.
And so I'm in LA, so there's a gazillion musicians, and they're all desperate for work, so I can probably find one to, you know, to do it for a credit, or you know, or a credit and a sandwich. I mean, that's just the truth of it. You know,
right.
there's plenty of studios. I'm going to write the script because that's the bit that I love doing, that and the recording. And you know, within probably within 3 days, maybe a week, if I want to slow the process down, I can have my first CD, and then I can begin looking, you know, playing it for people and seeing if it helps and seeing where it goes.
Okay. Yeah, it's possible that I'm making this more complicated than it needs to be.
Well, I'll guarantee you, look, for any of us, any time it seems like a project is a little too big for us, mm-hmm. it's because we're thinking about it in a not very useful way.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're up to any task, or if we're really not up to a task, we know it at a more fundamental level. Like, I'm not up to brain surgery. You know, giving or receiving, to be honest, you know,
neither
am I. You know, so that's not a question. I'm not sitting here going, yeah, maybe the guy on the radio can help me get ready for brain surgery. I know that one's not on the cards.
Yeah.
But within the realm of the things that are in the cards for me, if there are times where it seems like, oh, who am I to take this on? But I just, you know, I know that's nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wait for a better thought when that comes along. See, it's like a friend of mine used a great analogy. He said, you know, if your car's not firing on all cylinders, mm-hmm. any hill seems like a steep hill.
Yeah.
But when your car is working properly, it doesn't really matter how steep the hill is. You'll make it up because you've got a car.
Right.
And that's the thing about the human mind, is when our mind isn't firing on all cylinders, anything can seem like too much to handle. But when we're kind of relaxed, when we're relaxed, we're in the flow of our creative thinking, we can figure anything out.
Right. Yeah. And I'm a perfectionist, and I know that holds me back a lot, because if I don't have all the ducks lined up and know exactly, you know, what I'm doing, and then I'm hesitant.
Well, but that's, yeah, but that's, you know, honestly, that's just a bad habit. You know, you're not really a perfectionist any more than, you know, forced to behave the way your star sign tells you to. It may well be a tendency, but there's plenty of time. I'm a Libra. There's plenty of times I haven't been balanced in my actions.
Yeah.
You know, you're a perfectionist. I will guarantee you, if I spent a day with you, I could point out 50 things that you do that you don't care enough about. You don't even care about as much as I do. It's sort of, we get caught up in thinking, I'm this, therefore I can't that.
Right.
And it's just not the truth of who we are. Who we are is so much bigger than whatever label we want to put on us.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when that label is a limitation that we think we have to overcome. Oh, I'm a procrastinator. Well, no, you're not. You notice every time you procrastinate, and you don't notice the 500 things you do every day that you're not procrastinating about. And so you call yourself that,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's nice to know that, because you don't have to take your thinking so seriously, including your thinking about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore you don't have anything you have to overcome before you just make a couple of phone calls and make your CD.
Yeah.
So here's the thing, Stacey, if you, dun, 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 if you go ahead and do this, and I'll give you 3 weeks because I'm feeling like really generous. Mm-hmm. I'll have your address. I'll say you can email me, michael@supercoach.com.
Okay.
And when it's ready, I'll send you my address. You send me out a copy. And if I like it, I'll see what I can do for you.
Oh, well, that's really nice of you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for calling.
Okay. Take care.
Take care. Stay on the line. We'll get you a free CD from us. You know, look, I don't know. I'm hoping Stacy didn't think that I was being rude to her or flip. The reality is we make up so much stuff about ourselves, about the world, that we then treat as if it's real. And then we think we put our creativity into finding ways to overcome it. So we make up the obstacle, and then we use our creativity to overcome the obstacle that we made up. All I'm suggesting is it gets a lot easier, a lot simpler, and a lot friendlier if you just question the obstacle. Because 99 times out of 100, it really is all in your mind. Let's go out to Detroit and let's talk to Gwen. Gwen, welcome to the show. What are we going to speak about today?
Well, the reason I'm calling in today is because I'm pretty much at a crossroads in my life. I have been in management most of my adult life, and during that time, I've had individuals that I work with come to me on personal matters, and I've resolved issues for them, and they've thanked me tremendously. And also on work matters, I try to talk to the people as an individual and find out what they care about and what makes them tick, and then I motivate them based on that. I've also done some work with helping people lose weight. So I'm interested in coaching, very interested in coaching, because it seems to be a natural ability, and because I'm coming from a spiritual place, I think that's what's guiding me when I'm talking to these individuals. However, there's another side of me that's artistic, and I'm a seamstress and tailor, and I kind of want to go down that road also, so I'm just trying to determine which route to go and if I can make a living doing either, because right now I'm in corporate America and I'm trying to get out.
So why wouldn't you be able to make a living, given that there are other people making a living doing those things?
Well, I guess with the coaching, I just don't know how to get started, because the people that I know come to me, but I don't know how I can help strangers, so to speak.
Well, I mean, fair enough, but why is that an obstacle? Let me give you an example, so it doesn't sound like I'm being obtuse. I may be being obtuse, but I don't want it to sound like I'm being obtuse. You know, so if I had a scratch on the front of my car, and I wanted to get it taken out, and I didn't know where to go to do that, but that didn't stop me from doing it. It just directed where I put my attention and what I started asking people questions about till I got an answer.
Okay.
So somehow for you, the fact that you don't yet know how you're going to do this seems like an obstacle, as opposed to just what tells you what questions to ask next. Do you see the difference?
No, I think you lost me.
Okay, cool. Great. Because I think the fact that I lost you with that is exactly where you're stuck.
Okay.
because this is as common sense as it gets. Right? If I don't know how to get to a restaurant that I'm going to, I don't cancel and go home. I ask my GPS system, I ask my friend, I go online and look,
okay.
I call the restaurant and I go, hey, can you tell me how to get to your restaurant? And they go, yes. And then I go and I have a nice meal. But you somehow don't know how to approach people about this. And that's enough of a reason to not do it. As opposed to just, well, okay, that's the next piece of information that you need. So I'm suspecting that somehow it seems that there's something more going on. Because if it was really just missing information, you could get that in a heartbeat.
Okay. Well, I think that there's definitely some fear.
Mm-hmm.
because of the fact that working in a corporate environment is pretty safe, and leaping out into the abyss is a little scary.
Okay. So do you get, and it's okay if you don't, but do you get that there's no abyss? Right? That the way you're thinking about it, and I totally understand, it's not like I haven't had thoughts like that or I've never heard anyone talk like that. But if I took the drama out of that question, out of that metaphor, it would be, I'm looking at doing something that I think I'd really like, but I haven't figured out the business model yet. So I'm hesitant to leap into it before I figured out the business model.
So you're saying I need to obviously go figure out the business model.
Well, it's like, why would you, if you're in corporate America, tell me one company you've ever worked for that would launch into some new project without figuring out the business model first. I mean,
well,
that's just, you know.
I've bought many, many books on coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And as I've said, I'm doing it on a daily basis, really.
Mm-hmm.
But I think also the issue is I'm trying to figure out which route do I go. Do I go the coaching route or do I go with the creative sewing?
So Gwen, how do you think you're going to know the answer to that question? Like, where do you think that answer is going to come from?
Well, of course, within myself.
Okay, and do you think it's, so do you think?
I'm looking for the safe way, I think, is the issue. The way that I'm guaranteed will work.
Oh, I can tell you how to do that. I can absolutely tell you how to do that. Jump out of a window, break your legs, and go on disability.
Okay.
It's about as safe as you're going to get. Right? You know, so unless the government completely collapses, which, you know, hopefully won't happen for at least 10 more years, you're going to be fine. So I hope I can tell you're laughing, so you don't mind. But what's going on, and this is my professional guess, okay? What's going on is, like you said, is you're scared and you think you can make a decision from the place of fear.
Right, and I cannot.
And you
you're
cannot.
Absolutely right.
And if you are willing to kind of go past the fear and just recognize, look, I'm thinking about it. It's scary when I think about it. When I stop thinking about it, it's not scary. It's like going to one of those motion sensor things where, like, you're on a roller coaster. It's shot first person. If you close your eyes, you don't have vertigo. If you open your eyes, you have vertigo.
I'm sorry.
Well, so, you know, while you look at it from this fear place, through these thoughts, nothing is gonna work. I mean, honestly, Gwen, if your question was, you know, I want to explore viable business models for coaches and for artists, well, there are answers to those questions. But if your question is, how do I choose between these two imaginary ideas of professions that I'm making up in my head from a place of fear? Well, that's not really a question you can answer.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely it does.
All right. So cowboy up, girl.
Okay.
All right. Hang on the line. We're going to get you a copy of our CD on how to get out of your own way. All right.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Let's duck back out to LA and let's talk to, is it Liliana or Liliana?
Oh, Milena.
Milena.
Yes.
Okay. What are we going to talk about today?
I said I'm going to ask you, what do you think about actors who make about $20 million for one movie? And is it a fair value for money exchange in that case?
Yeah, I think it's 100% fair value for money, and I'll tell you why.
As well as you have been an actor, and you have experience, too.
Yeah, never got the 20 mil, but I shouldn't have. So here's how value for money in the marketplace works. If you take the uniqueness of what you do, the scope of its impact, in other words, how deeply it affects people, the scale of its impact, in other words, how many people it affects, and you factor those three things together, you get the value of a particular service. So for a movie star, okay, the scope of their impact is pretty low because, you know, they make people smile for a couple hours. the scale of their impact is huge. There are usually less than 10 actors at any given time that can completely open a movie, that just the fact that they are in the movie guarantees an audience. So the fact that they're in the movie guarantees that the scale will be huge and that millions and millions of people will go see that movie. And because there are only 10 of them, there's an even higher premium for it because there's limited options to get somebody who has that drawing power. That's why they can earn that kind of money. That's the way value works in the marketplace. If there were 1,000 actors who could do that, they wouldn't make 20 million, they'd make 2 million. If there were 100,000 actors who could do that, they'd make about $2,000 a movie.
No, I think there should be about 1,000, or maybe not 1,000, but 100 who could do the same thing.
Well, there are 100 who might be able to put in the same performance. In fact, there's probably more than 100 who could be as good, but they're not getting paid just to be good. They're getting paid because their name above the picture brings people into the audience and brings money into the pockets of the people who are paying them. Value, if you take the emotion out of it, if you take the morality out of it, value is actually completely impersonal and highly predictable. What the reason that we kind of don't see it sometimes is because we think, well, what about a nurse? You know, why doesn't a nurse make this? What about a school teacher? Well, the reason that a school teacher doesn't make that is that they make a huge impact. So they've got really high scope of impact, but they tend to make it on a small scale. They tend to reach, you know, for a public school teacher, maybe 50 kids a year. And there's 100 other, 1,000 other teachers who, if they drop out, the school system can put in their place. So from an impersonal value formula kind of a way, it makes total sense what people make. Now, if you're in one of those professions and you want to increase your value, then you need to find a way to either increase the scope of the impact, in other words, how much impact you're making, how much value you're creating for the people that you work with, the scale, how many people you're creating that value for, and or the uniqueness, how replaceable are you in what it is that you want to do? And that's the value formula in a nutshell. All right, Lillian, we're almost out of time, so I want to try and sneak in one more call. Stay on the line. We're going to get you a CD. And let's go. Let's see if we can sneak in Maggie. Maggie in Michigan, welcome to the show. If you can give me a quick question, I'll do my best to give you a quick answer.
Okay. I was working full-time. I went down to working 3 tens a week to work on a project that's passionate to me, and that's journaling with kids. And I was doing workshops in the public schools for free.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband said, you know, we need more money. You have to, whatever, you're not getting paid to do this. So I took a second job, and I am now bringing in, you know, a few hundred extra dollars a month. Mm-hmm. But I don't really have the time to do what I'm passionate about. So I guess I need a way to figure out the value and how to get paid for what I'm passionate about, which is teaching kids how journaling can help them.
Sure. So here's the 30-second answer, which hopefully will be really, really, really worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Take some time in the next couple of days to yourself.
Okay.
Take some time to get quiet. Take some time to realize that you're absolutely okay whether you solve this problem in the short term or not, that there's no train heading for you. You know,
not anymore.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And when you start to feel that feeling of calm and quiet inside you, let some new thinking come up about this, because the way you're thinking about it is going to stop you from getting an answer. And if you open up to new thinking, you're going to get a completely different perspective on it. And I'm sure you will get some insight that's really helpful. Stay on the line. We're going to get you a CD. Thank you all for listening. Until next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.